Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
My name's Oliver Scott. And before I begin the story of Halloween night in 1994, West Hollywood, California, I'd first like you to know, to tell this story of Halloween night and truly capture the horrors it entails, anyone listening would first have to disregard everything they believe and accept a new reality. A reality that things we feared as children, the things we heard about in ghost stories, and the things we eventually grew to believe were make-believe, are in fact as real as you and I, but are simply so terrifying that, over time, the world has chosen to believe they're not. The date was October 31st, 1994. And just like every year before that in West Hollywood, California, excitement and buzz had filled the air.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Building up for days and weeks, all in anticipation of what would be the best time of our lives. The final night of Halloween. There must have been like 6 different parties going on that night, but my friend Martin had managed to get us invites to the Grimsley Estate party, which was insane at the time because not only was the party thrown at the huge Grimsley Manor up in Beverly Hills, but everyone knew it had the best people, costumes, and vibes you could ask for at a Halloween party. Martin called around 8 p.m. to tell me he and my other friends, Jacob and Randy, were headed to pick me up at 9 p.m. So I took a quick shower, threw on my costume as Eric Draven from The Crow, and lit a cigarette while waiting on the porch for the guys to arrive. The van pulled into my driveway at exactly 9 p.m. that night, and as I stood up to get in the back of the van, Martin quickly stuck his hand out the window and hit the cigarette out of my hand before saying, "Come on, man, you already know I hate when you smoke around me. No way you're bringing that shit into my van." I simply laughed and got into the van, as it wasn't the first time he'd done that, and I honestly didn't care as I just wanted to get to the party without ruining the mood. The three of them had gone with pretty basic costumes that night. Martin went as Jason from Friday the 13th, Jack as Michael Myers, and Randy as Freddy Krueger. "Damn, you guys should have told me it was a masked party. I would have chosen a different costume," I said jokingly. After 20 minutes of jokes and getting hyped for the party, everyone stopped in silence as we arrived at the massive gates of the Grimsley Estate. 2 men stood at the gate to check invitations, and after that, we drove slowly into the estate and toured the huge white mansion sitting in the middle of it, with loud music, flashing lights, and the sound of partying teenagers filling the air. We stopped the van not too far from the Grimsley Mansion, and stepping down was like stepping into another world. The house was massive, 3 stories with high windows that seemed to go on forever, and enough land that you could probably get lost just walking around the property. The driveway alone was big enough to fit a dozen cars, and the whole thing looked more like a hotel than a home. It had those tall white columns you only see in old money estates, and while the estate itself was eerily dark, the house was lit up so bright it almost felt like daylight. We walked into the house around 9:45 p.m., and after about 20 minutes of standing around and getting drinks, the guys and I eventually split up. I ended up meeting a girl named Darla in one of the upstairs rooms. The both of us instantly hit it off, and we spent the rest of the party drinking, dancing, and just having a good time. Eventually, I needed to use the bathroom but had no idea where to go, so I asked, "Hey, I gotta use the bathroom. You know where it is?" She nodded and said, "Yeah, there's 3 downstairs and 2 up here, but those ones probably have lines, so it'd be smart to head downstairs." I raised an eyebrow a little confused by how well she seemed to know the place. "You come here a lot?" I asked.
"Well, I guess you could say that. I'm Darla Grimsley. This is my house."
The revelation at the time was pretty surprising to me, but I didn't want to make it weird, so I simply responded by saying, "That's cool. Well, I'm going to find that bathroom now," before heading downstairs to find my friends. The party was in full swing by then. Lights were flashing, the music was loud, and everyone was drunk and in costumes, making it almost impossible for me to pick anyone out of the crowd. After a while, I gave up on trying to find my friends and decided I'd meet up with them later, heading to a quieter section of the house where I assumed the bathrooms would be. Instead, I ended up in a long hallway that had multiple doors lining both sides. What really caught my attention, however, was a huge wooden door at the end of the hall. It looked ancient, with all of these strange markings carved into it. Nothing too extraordinarily creepy, but weird enough to draw my attention even more. Now, I don't know what it was, but something about the door or whatever was behind it just pulled me toward it, and without even thinking, I placed my hand on the large metal knob to open it. Right then, I heard Darla's voice interrupt from behind. That's not the bathroom. I turned around in confusion as I couldn't understand why I even tried opening the door in the first place. Darla then proceeded to walk toward me and the door, and I smiled awkwardly before telling her,
"Yeah,
I'm sorry, I think I got a little lost. Just couldn't find a bathroom." She took my hand and replied,
"Well, you definitely don't want to go in there. Come on, I'll show you where to go."
After that, we went back upstairs. I used the bathroom, and then I spent the rest of my time at the party with Darla before deciding it was time to leave around midnight. The guys and I had agreed we'd leave the first Halloween party at midnight, as we had planned to head out to another party and meet up with the rest of our friends. I said goodbye to Darla and headed downstairs to the van, but surprisingly, no one else was outside when I got there. I figured they were still inside, so I headed back into the house and decided to wait on the couch next to the door until they were done. After 5 minutes of waiting, however, the three of them emerged from the hallway with the wooden door, and I waved for them to meet me outside as I assumed they'd want to say goodbye to some people and I wasn't really feeling the need to hang around. The ride to the next house was oddly quiet for some reason, and while at first I tried making conversation, asking about their night, it was obvious none of them were in the mood for small talk, so I realized there was no point. All three of them had their masks on since we left the party. Martin and Jack, who were both sat up front, remained silent, eyes fixed on the road, and Randy, who was at the back with me, was just sitting there staring at nothing. I assumed their bad mood meant they weren't up for the next party we were headed to, so I said, "Hey, if you guys aren't up for the next one, you know, we could always just go home." None of them reacted to what I said, and after that, I decided I didn't really care what their issue was. So I leaned back, rested my head on the van, and lit a cigarette to smoke while we drove in silence. The drive to the next party was taking longer than expected, and when I looked at my watch, I noticed we'd been on the road for almost 30 minutes, and the next party was only supposed to be 6 minutes away. I can't tell if I was starting to sober up or if it was something else, but I suddenly began to notice a few things that made everything feel off. For starters, none of my friends had moved or said a single word for the entire ride. Randy especially stood out as he hadn't taken his eyes off the wall of the van the whole time. Another thing was they'd mentioned earlier that night that the masks made it hard to breathe after a while, but none of them had taken them off since we'd left the party 30 minutes earlier. Despite this, all over, the most bizarre thing that almost confirmed my suspicions that night was when I realized I had just smoked 2 whole cigarettes in the back of Martin's van, and he didn't say a word. That was when it really clicked. Whoever those people in the van with me were, they weren't my friends. As I started to wrap my head around the nightmare I was in, my mind raced with a million questions, trying to make sense of what the hell was going on. Panic was creeping in, but I forced myself to stay calm. I knew the smartest thing to do was to keep it cool, pretend I didn't know what was really happening. But deep down, I knew I couldn't keep that up forever. At some point, I'd have to act, as I had no idea who those people were or where they'd been taking me for the past half an hour. I looked out the window and noticed we'd gotten farther away from the city, with barely any lights outside. It hit me that if they took me wherever they were headed, I wouldn't stand a chance against all three of them. So I mustered up whatever courage I had in the moment and got up, moving towards the two guys in the front. "Hey man, I need to pee really quick.
Can we stop here? I said after tapping the driver's shoulder. He kept driving with no reaction, eyes fixed on the road like I hadn't said a word. My throat began closing up as fear gripped me, but I forced myself to get the next words out. Dude, I said I need to pee. Pull over. Again, no reaction, and at that point, I knew whoever they were, they had no intention of letting me out. I remained standing between the two imposters at the front, and after getting no sign of a response from either of them, I did the only thing I could do and said a quick prayer before grabbing onto the steering wheel, struggling with the driver, and forcing the van off the road. The van slammed into a seat jarringly, and I was thrown back into the rear end, hitting my head hard on the floor. My skull felt bruised from the impact, and I felt a sharp sting from a cut on my head. Airbags weren't exactly standard at the time, so I had no idea what had happened to the two guys up front. All I knew was, I had to get out of there, and fast. Getting up wasn't easy, as my head was banging. There was a constant ringing around me, and I could barely walk. Still, I managed to stumble out the back of the van and noticed we were just leaving the city limits, about 1 kilometer into the forest. My breath was short and my vision blurred as I began walking towards the city. Before I could make any real distance, though, I felt something cold and tight grip on my leg. I looked down to the horrific sight of who I thought was Martin holding on to me. But it wasn't Martin. Both his legs were broken so badly, I could see the bones sticking out, and his other arm lay on the floor a few feet away, surrounded by a trail of some thick liquid he had dragged with him from the wreck. He looked up at me, and I stepped back in horror as the broken mask revealed some sort of creature underneath. Its face was an extremely dark green, covered in slime, and its eyes, or at least what should have been his eyes, were brown orbs covered in scales, fixed on me. The creature opened its mouth to let out a terrible screech while reaching for me. In pure shock, I stepped back hurriedly and fell to the ground. Nothing about this made sense to me. I could barely breathe, but all I could think was, what the hell is that thing? And how exactly I was going to escape when I could barely walk? My eyes remained fixed on the creature crawling toward me, but out of the corner of my eye, I noticed another one walk out of the back of the van before approaching me slowly. The thing had a limp, and its mask was completely gone.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Revealing the horrific-faced creature I had seen earlier that night. At that point, I was in total panic, and no matter how hard I tried to get up, I just couldn't move. So I accepted my fate, laid back on the cold floor, and waited for the horror movie to come to an end. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a car's bright headlights lit up the whole area. After stopping on the road beside me, I could hear footsteps approach before lifting me and helping me towards the car. Confused, I looked back as I didn't understand why the creature hadn't killed me. But shockingly, they were both gone. The destroyed van, as well as the trail of liquid from earlier, were still in place, but the two creatures had completely vanished, as if they had never been there. Whoever had saved me gently placed me into the back seat of the car, and when I turned to see who it was, I was shocked to see Darla shut the door and head to the driver's seat. Honestly, at the time, I couldn't decide if I was dead, hallucinating, or losing my mind, but in the 20-minute ride that night, Darla assured me I was very much alive before revealing the chilling secrets of Halloween night and what I had just witnessed. See, according to Darla, decades ago before October 31st became Halloween, it used to be a sacred day when all people who practiced the occult would meet up and offer sacrifices to their respective deities. It was believed that after the rituals during the day, demons and creatures of the night would roam among them all night, so believers would have to paint their faces or wear masks in order to blend in and avoid being possessed. Over time, however, witchcraft was slowly cracked down on, and as a result, a few occult families came up with the idea of Halloween and presented it to the community. They claimed it'd be a way for history to replace the dreadful day with something celebratory, but the reality is far darker than that. The purpose of this so-called celebration is simply to disguise what they were doing. And to this day, Halloween is still a sacred day for the occult worshippers. Only this time, no one knows who they are or what demons roam among us at night. Darla went on to reveal that her family had been involved in the occult for generations, and the Halloween party was the method for sacrifices to be given without suspicion. That being said, she explained my friends had been sacrificed the moment they walked behind the wooden door, and the creatures I had seen that night were demons that had taken over their bodies, probably planning on eating me or using me for something unspeakable. The more she spoke, the more my mind raced, struggling to process the horror of everything I had been through. I remember my whole body trembling in fear, and once we got to the hospital, we told them I had been in a car accident, and they admitted me for treatment overnight. The next day was the worst day of my life. Martin, Randy, and Jack were all declared missing, and I watched in silence as their parents prayed and searched, desperate for answers for years to follow. I couldn't say anything, and I wasn't going to. The memory of that night and my friends continued to haunt me for years, but eventually, something changed. Over time, Darla's presence in my life became more than just a reminder of that horrific night. She was the only one who understood the weight I carried, and we got married 2 years after the incident. Even though the nightmares never truly stopped, Darla always knew how to soothe me, as if she had a strange hold over me. Now, years later, with graying hair and a tired heart, I find myself telling this story, not to warn you, but to confess. You see, the demons didn't stop after that night. Every Halloween they came back, and it was Darla who ensured me they were fed. I kept quiet because I loved her and her family, and maybe a part of me was afraid if I didn't help her, they'd come for me too. So every year we choose new faces behind masks. And although she's dead now and I am old, it's my turn to tell you this. On the night of Halloween, be wary of what you do. Lock your doors and avoid the faces behind the masks. Please know, I do not give this warning out of sympathy, but because tonight, you're part of the story.
Unlike other people I know today who actively seek this out, I knew nothing about backrooms, levels, monsters, nothing. Everything that happened that night was without my knowledge, and therefore, without my preparation. That night I had just had a loud argument with my wife. I was exhausted and upset, so I went straight to the parking lot, got in my car, and just lay there, trying to sleep. The pain in my neck was killing me. Sleeping in the car always left me with that damn pain, like someone was pushing my head forward hard. Eventually, I fell asleep. When I woke up, I was in the same car. Everything seemed the same at first, but soon I noticed something different. The spot where I had parked was gone. Instead, my car was in a tunnel. The only thing illuminating the road was the headlights of my car. I looked at the gas tank, and to my surprise, it was full. Something that was not possible considering how much I had driven that day. At first, I thought I must be dreaming, that this was all just a strange nightmare fueled by fatigue. But every time I looked ahead, the fear became more real. There were no curves, no junctions, just that endless road. I tried to turn on the radio, hoping to distract myself from the eerie silence that filled the car, but the radio wasn't working. No noise, not even static. It was completely broken. I sped up, hoping to find some change in the landscape, some sign that this highway ended somewhere. But nothing happened. The road was still the same, endless, and the gas wouldn't go down a millimeter. That was what scared me. A gas tank that wouldn't empty as if my car was stuck in a loop. The thought of stopping terrified me, but my mind, in an attempt to rationalize what was happening, told me that maybe if I got out, I could get my bearings better. So I braked. The car stopped dead in its tracks. As soon as I opened the car door, I heard something. Voices. Voices in my head telling me to run, to get away from the car, that the car was dangerous. At first, I thought it was just my own thoughts, but something about those voices was different. It was very strange, and I don't know how to explain it. It was as if someone was in my head, trying to tell me things, but pretending to be my thoughts. I felt a shiver as the voices started to become clearer. They were telling me to run away from that place, but it didn't make sense. Run to where? There was nothing but darkness around the car. Still, I decided to heed them. I know this may sound innocent, but maybe those voices were warning me. Maybe there was something in my car that was dangerous. I started walking, then running away from the car, not knowing where I was going. I just wanted to get away. That's when I felt that old pain in my neck. It was so intense that it made me stop and instinctively bring my hand to the back of my neck and raise my head. And in that instant, I saw it. That pain in my neck saved my life, because if I hadn't raised my head, I wouldn't have seen what was happening above me. There was a creature. A huge creature was slowly sliding down from the ceiling of the tunnel. It was neither fully human nor fully animal. It had the body of a spider, but the face was the most disturbing thing. It was a human face, deformed and expressionless, staring at me as it descended. I panicked. My body reacted before my mind could process it. I ran as fast as I could, not knowing if I could escape from something like that. Behind me, I began to hear small sounds, like tiny footsteps approaching from the darkness. I looked back for just a second and saw small creatures that seemed to come out of the shadows, chasing me. I stumbled and fell, scraping my elbow on the asphalt, but I didn't care. I got up immediately and kept running, not daring to look back again. The voices in my head were shouting, telling me to stop running, not to go back to my car, which was even more dangerous. I no longer believed in those voices and decided to continue. My legs were getting tired, and despair was growing in my chest. Those humanoid beings were close. They were catching up with me. The spider scared me even more because she was much faster, walking on the roof of the tunnel. Finally, I saw the car in the distance. A glimmer of hope broke through my fear, and I ran towards it with all my might, ignoring the pain in my body. I reached the car just in time. I threw myself into the driver's seat and slammed the door shut. The little demons that had been chasing me stopped just at the edge of the headlights and disappeared into the darkness. My breathing was labored and my body trembled. The spider was right in front of the window. Its human face, that grotesque, hideous face, was only inches away from me, staring right at me. It wasn't trying to get in, it wasn't banging on the window or showing signs of aggression, it was just watching me as if waiting for something. I froze, unable to move. My mind was blank, the voices in my head stopped the moment I got into the car. Before getting in, I was paranoid and afraid of the car, but once I got in, nothing. I checked the car just in case, but I knew it wasn't dangerous. Whatever was outside wanted to get me out of the car, and at that moment I understood that this was my only source of safety. When I looked out the window again, the spider was gone. I started the car again, my hands trembling as I touched the steering wheel, and I accelerated, trying to put as much distance as possible between me and the thing. The car sped forward, but the road didn't end. The eyes of the creatures glowed in the darkness to the sides, but none of them dared to approach the car. It was as if they were afraid of it, or at least of something in it. With each passing minute, the tension became more unbearable. Time seemed to lose meaning. There was no sunrise, no exit signs, nothing to indicate that this damned road would come to an end. My mind was starting to wear out, and exhaustion was getting the better of me. I couldn't go on like this forever. I had been driving for hours at full speed. And then, I saw it. At the end of the road, a wall appeared out of nowhere. I tried to brake, but the car didn't respond fast enough. I crashed. The impact was brutal, but right at the moment of the hit, I opened my eyes. I was back in the parking lot, right where I had fallen asleep. I relaxed and tried to calm down. I thought it had all been a dream, but when I looked at my elbow, I saw the injury I had sustained when I fell on the road. After that night, I began to investigate. I discovered that what I had experienced was real. The back rooms were real, and there were more people who had gone through something similar. I don't know why I had been taken to that place, but I did know one thing. Those beings that stalked me in the tunnel were afraid of the car. There was something about it that kept them away. What terrifies me most, however, was another discovery. While I was inquiring about the back rooms, I found out that everyone who reached level 69 had some kind of car breakdown. Do you know what that means? I only had a broken radio, but others had their lights or, even worse, their engine failed. I could only imagine how terrible it would have been if that had happened, since all the way I drove the car, maybe those people tried to walk it,
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Needless to say, no one survived to tell the tale.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.